This is a HeadGum Podcast.
This is Aaron McGowan, certified personal trainer and barrel roller.
This is Ryan Stanger, certified personal trainer and certified mama's boy.
And you found The Dumbbells, a comedy fitness podcast.
Committed to bringing you inspiration,
motivation,
and sometimes, like today, some information.
Hey, Dumbbells, let's get dumb.
This is a very exciting episode.
It is.
All you listeners out there, people have been asking for this topic. And, you know, I think people are always hungry for a little more insight on me.
Absolutely. I get those emails straight to me. They're like, what's up with that guy?
Yeah. And you yourself, Aaron, I know, are fascinated by, you know, my origins. And
absolutely.
So this is going to happen, this email. And then just a quick little preamble. This, you know, the information we're throwing out today is just for entertainment. It's not meant to diagnose or treat anybody out there. So just know that going into it. But without further ado, I think we should just get right into it. Aaron, do you agree?
Oh, no, I think we should just talk and talk. No, of course.
Bunch of dumb jokes. So very special guest we have on the show today. She is a nurse practitioner with 25 to 30 years of experience. Most recently, her area of expertise has shifted to hormone replacement therapy. Our guest today is the great Janet Stanger, NP, also known as my mom.
This is huge. Welcome.
Yeah.
Thank you. I've been after Ryan to let me do this for a long time, and he's finally got over his trepidation and has allowed me to come on.
I don't want all my lies exposed.
No.
That motherfucker says this? No. That's not the way it went down at all. Mom, we're going to get into some hormone. Is it weird to call you mom on the show, or does it?
No, because when you're a nurse practitioner, people don't know what to call you. They, you know, you're not doctor. And if people call you doctor, you always have to say, I'm not a doctor. And then they go, but you're my doctor. And it's like, yeah, but don't say that in front of anybody else, because then I'll be practicing medicine without a license. So just call me mom or Janet is fine. Okay. I don't have my patients call me mom. They just call me Janet. So that's
it. But do they sometimes on accident?
They all call me doc. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
She meant mom, but
mom or doc, either way, you take enough medicine and you're calling people whatever.
And now the big drive is to make entry into practice for nurse practitioners a doctoral program. So now you're going to be Dr. NP, which is just ridiculous. So anyway,
yeah, it sounds like a show like on A&E or something.
It does, actually.
Yes.
Wait a second.
I know. It's crazy.
Sybil Shepherd is Dr. NP.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay. Did you guys ever accidentally call a teacher mom?
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
It's tough to come back from an elementary school. Everybody laughs.
It's like that or a big fart. Either one, you're embarrassed and you'll never forget it the rest of your life.
Nobody else will either. So you gotta carry that around with you.
That's the fart kid that called Mrs. Olson mom. Yeah. You're just like, oh God, this is me now?
Yeah, you actually have to move to get over that one.
You do, and you should, yeah.
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 Now, Janet, I wanted to ask really fast. Did Stanger really play football?
He really did, yes.
Okay, I just had to find out.
I have one of my favorite pictures of him right here on my desk. Can you see that?
Oh, cute. Wow, look at him go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see him. He's running.
Yeah, he was running.
And just for the listeners out there, it's me scoring a touchdown.
Not a huge deal, scoring a touchdown. Yeah.
Yes, he is.
I love it.
Yeah, it was.
One of many. So I don't know, that's people like to know this stuff. I don't. I mean, I'm.
Yeah, it's
I'm
for the listener.
Yeah. Yes. I'm embarrassed to talk about it. People love to know, you know, scoring touchdowns, you know, a lot of like long runs, you know, whatever. It doesn't matter. I mean, who cares? But it's just, we just want to be, you know, correct on this show. We're putting out a lot of information. We're talking about hormone replacement therapy, but people need to know, like, is it real? Did he score a lot of touchdowns? Yes,
yeah,
I did.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And, you know, they called him in Rockland clear and present danger stanger.
Oh man, this is gonna be a great episode.
It didn't, it didn't take, because it's a lot of words.
Did you,
we didn't fully understand branding at the time, so they're just like, that's a lot of like that's clear and present.
Oh
yeah,
my
Ranger,
gosh.
Danger, Stanger. But so Mom, we want to talk about you. So just I know you were extremely active. You still are, you know, growing up, a great skier, a great tennis player, stuff that I can remember. I remember going to the gym with you a lot. A runner, have ran multiple marathons and stuff, but what were, as a kid, were you playing sports as a kid? Did you, I know you were super fast.
My mom was the kind of mom that did not ever want to have one bead of sweat on her. So she was not a real promoter of sports. And whenever I went, like I swam in the races every year at our little local swimming pool, she'd always go, why do you want to do that? It's okay if you come in last. And I'm like, what? So she was not into sports at all. And my dad had wrestled in high school, but after that, he kind of was done. So anything that my sisters and I did, they were all fine with, but they were all kind of surprised. Like, you really want to go out for track? You really want to do high jump? You know, why do you want to do that? So we didn't play too many organized sports, but yeah, swam a lot, skied a lot. We walked everywhere because back, you know, then it was safe. And we lived in Palos Verdes, which is probably still pretty safe, but super safe back then. So you'd walk a couple miles to school or walk to the beach, be at the beach all day, walk home. So yeah, active like that. And then in high school, started skiing a lot, skied in college. I live closer to the snow now than I ever have. And I haven't skied in years now, but I'm going to take my little granddaughter up skiing and this month, try it again.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. So, yeah, gym always and running always and still go to the gym. I don't run as much anymore, but there's a lot of great trails up here. Ryan's been on them. We live in Nevada City, so it's kind of in the foothills of the Sierra by Grass Valley. So lots of great hikes. And yeah, so still do that. Still go to the gym.
Oh, this is so funny because now you're the host of the of the Zoom.
All right. Oh, so now we'll just start a serious lecture about the HIPAA access and what the pituitary does and the
hippocampus. This is so funny. Here, let's see.
So where are you having this baby? Are you having it at home?
Cedars.
Everybody up where we live has their babies at home.
I'm technically a high risk pregnancy because of my age and I went through IVF. And so, and I've never had a kid before to kind of know what my body will do. And so for my own peace of mind and probably my doctors too, we're going to be at a hospital. So,
you know, knowing what I know, I feel like that's the wise choice, but a lot of women up here opt not to because, you know, when there's an obstetric emergency, it's an emergency and it's not like you don't really have time to pack everybody up and go to So my daughter, whose little one is two, she went to the hospital both times and I was extremely grateful for that. You know, just because even if the baby just needs blow by, you want them to have oxygen air.
Whatever They have it at the hospital. I don't have it at my house.
Yes. No. And and you don't want to get a little emergency room situation going in your living room.
Yeah. No. Yeah. No. So I'm grateful that we have a great hospital and to just know that I can lean on that for this.
Yes.
Crazy. Yes. You know, I think when you're younger, you don't have as much like perspective on how crazy it is. You still do, but like I'm almost 40 and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. This is really crazy. And is Stanger back?
Here I am. Yes.
Oh, okay. I also realized I should call you Stanger for this episode. Oh.
No, I mean, that's what we call ourselves, but it's probably more correct to be Stanger. I just have been Stanger for almost 50 years, so.
So we'll just hop back in, I guess, like right at, you were talking about like what you're doing now, Ma?
We walked and go to the gym and a little bit of yoga. And some trail walking, not too much running anymore. Ran my last marathon quite a while ago. Knocked a little bit of cartilage off the back of my knee, so I don't run more than about 2 or 3 miles at a time now. And that's about it on exercise.
How many marathons did you run?
Three.
Three. Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. Last one is the California International Marathon in Sacramento, and that one I ran in 3:45, and I wanted to run another one to get under, I wanted to get sub 3.5, but I knocked some cartilage off the back of my right knee, and every time I go over about 3 miles, it swells, and it's really stiff, and I'm like, I don't know if I can do this, so
yeah.
I'm not running anymore. Which is sad because when you run, that's really all you want to do.
She was a super freak for running.
Yeah. True.
What's the mile breakdown for under 3:30 on a marathon?
It's like little, 7? No. 7 would be like the Ethiopians and the, you know, those guys. When I ran my last marathon, when I hit the halfway point, which is 13.1, the people that call out your split times were saying the front runners had already finished. That's how fast they run. They're running sub 5 minute miles now. No, I think the actual time I was running at 9:13 to make 3 hours and 45 minutes. So I think to run that at 3.5, you have to be under 9. So 8 and some change.
Okay.
Wow. Which is that's incredible. 9 is a real comfortable pace for me. Sub 9 is, I feel like I'm really pushing it.
Yeah. Man. Yeah. Whew. Yeah. Whoo, doggy.
That's cuckoo. We do have a medical professional on, so I want to use the right terms.
Yes. Yeah.
And we use that a lot in medicine. Is we use cuckoo a lot.
So if somebody came in and said, like, I can't stop eating Cocoa Puffs, what would you say?
I'd say you're cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. All
right. Cute.
What if somebody came on with long ears that said that they're into tricks?
Oh, yeah, that's the bunny, but I can't remember what his tagline was.
Tricks are for kids.
Oh, tricks are for kids, of course. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that always pissed me off, those fucking kids. It's like, let the rabbit have some tricks. You got plenty.
I know.
If a cartoon rabbit came to me when I was in third grade and said it wanted to try some of these tricks, I'd let him have it.
Absolutely. Because he might turn out to be the Easter Bunny, and that would not be somebody you would want to piss off. So
absolutely.
No, you don't get the basket anymore.
Oh, well.
also, you know, listen, I'm not saying like it's a pedophile in a rabbit costume. I'm saying it's a cartoon rabbit.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I do think you're right. We did need to say something about that.
I want to clarify. Yeah. It's not somebody like in a windowless van pulling up with a dirty rabbit costume on. I'm saying a magical cartoon rabbit appears to me.
Yes.
Yeah. That's not Roger.
Ay, ay, ay.
That's not Bugs.
Yeah.
It's some kind of new IP created for this serial.
He probably I would let has him... a name.
Yeah.
He probably does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure the marketing team came up with some name that you never knew. It's like that rabbit's name was Gerald, you know, whatever, yeah. whatever it is. It's like tested well. Yeah. So mom, and I also know that you were, you've always been a healthy eater. Were you watching it? Cause I know like, grandma, your mom cooked a lot, was a good cook. So you guys were doing a lot of home cooked meals and she was always conscious of, you know, trying to eat healthy, whatever the trends were at the time.
Yeah.
Was that something that started for you as a kid or when did that kind of enter into your, your lifestyle where you actually wanted to eat healthy?
I think that because my mom was worried about her weight from the minute I can remember, we always like non-fat milk. I mean, if it wasn't blue, it wasn't in our house. And sugar-free soda, if we had it. Everything was always low-fat, low-sugar. And I guess you just kind of grow up with that's the right way to eat. And now you come to find out that maybe those things aren't as important as getting quality, you know, fat in your diet. But I've always been like, oh my God, just if it calls for a tablespoon of olive oil, I'm going to put in a half a teaspoon. Now I've tried to evolve past that and realize that, you know, my goal is maybe 65 grams of fat a day. Before maybe 10 years ago, I would have thought there's no way I'm going to eat that much fat, you know? So probably always a little bit fat starved, maybe even a little protein starved. Ryan, you know, I've been doing intermittent fasting way before it was.
Yeah.
Pop, you guys used to laugh at me when you were in high school that I only ate one meal a day. And then all of a sudden, everybody does intermittent fasting. Everybody's a warrior. And all of a sudden, it's like, yeah, I've been vindicated.
Yeah. My disordered eating now has a name.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
So, but yes, I do, because my feeling is that the environment has become so toxic that you can't control maybe the air you breathe, but you can control the water you drink and the food you put in your system. So I'm very conscious about drinking clean water and organic food, grass-raised, you know, everything. I try and be really aware of phyto and xenoestrogens, which are a big problem now in the environment. And I think that's critical because, you know, you can't control everything. So you got to control what you can and capitalize on that.
Yeah, I remember you and Dad always being pretty progressive on what was happening from a nutrition standpoint. And I would say, like, and this was pre-internet. Now with internet and, you know, with, you know, people are looking more into this kind of stuff and there's just, you know, a lot of information that's available. You know, some of it's bullshit, but, you know, also some of it is really cutting edge. But I remember you guys being usually ahead of the curve on all that stuff.
I think so. We were making you drink protein powder back when it tastes like gasoline and creatine and, you know...
Yeah, always like supplements.
Supplements,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, we had that, like, there was like one kind of health food store that we would go to that French couple owned.
Yeah.
I remember going there with that, Hello, Peter.
Yeah.
You know, and they would, yeah.
Elliot's, yeah.
Yeah, Elliot's, yeah. Yeah. And I remember, I've told Aaron, but the, and the listeners, that the, world champion 49ers used to work out in our little town of Rockland,
yes.
which is the craziest fucking thing in the world, Aaron. If you could imagine that, like these, you know, four-time Super Bowl winners, the 49ers came to your little tiny town and would work out. And so you'd be at the bank and see Jerry Rice at the bank. Yeah. He's like, holy shit. As like a fourth and fifth grader, like I got Joe Montana's autograph. But we heard that Jerry Rice had bought ginseng vials at this health food store. And so my dad got them for me. Whatever Jerry Rice. Yeah. It's like,
I mean, like that was when the 49ers Jerry Rice. Were it legit. Did.
Yeah. Yes, they were super legit, and they worked out their summer camp. They didn't have their big training facility in Santa Clara, so they did it at Sierra College because they wanted them to have their summer training camp where it was like 1,000 degrees. And oh, wow. So Rocklin fit the bill. I mean, in summer here, it's hot. And it was also small, so there wasn't a whole lot of them, you know, a lot for them to do. So I think that was part of the game plan, too, is kind of, you know, don't have a lot of vice-type situations that they could get into. And so, we'd go run the track when they were there, and they were in the swimming pool when you guys did your swim team there. So, yeah, it was pretty fun.
It was thrilling. I'm trying to think of, like, how to put it in today. This is in Northern California, this little tiny town. So if anybody out there listening just – you know, that is in a small town where there's, you know, maybe two restaurants, a video store, and really nothing else. Imagine just Patrick Mahomes walking around and Travis Kelce. You're just like, what the hell? It was great.
For the whole summer.
Maybe Taylor Swift coming through.
Maybe.
So it was very exciting. But this little, and I remember going to like weird health food stores with you guys where it was just like, you know, it would smell strange in there. There was like weird people that were like barefoot walking around and kind of like BO and stuff.
And the desiccated liver tabs. Do you remember those?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's a.
Yeah.
Oh, that's yeah.
Sam Pay and the Pays, right? My dad and my mom. We were going to the gym. My sister and I would go to the gym with my parents, Ironwood Gym. Mm-hmm. Because it was, they had indoor tennis courts, right? Because the weather was so bad in Idaho, you needed to be able to train indoors.
Yeah.
And so we would just like sit there and then watch them play tennis and then go, you know, screw around on the Nautilus equipment. And
It was a nice gym for the day.
It was.
Yeah. For that.
I remember it being really nice, but my parents were like, you know, pumping weights and, you know, taking the dumbbells for a test drive and
Well, in that house that we had on Hayden, we had that room upstairs that we turned into a gym that had a speed bag and a heavy bag and a bench. Do you remember that?
Little tiny weights for me.
Yeah.
It was real. Cute. It was like lunatic fringe. You know, people were like, what the hell are you doing? What is this?
I know.
So speaking of that, we should get into now. So you're, you worked for, a while now and doing some hormone replacement therapy, kind of, you know, have stepped back from the business, but it was the last thing you were doing. And I know it's a passion and a big area of interest for you now. And so can you explain to our listeners, you know, a little bit about hormone replacement therapy and essentially what your, you know, your areas of interest or specialty were?
Yeah. So hormones are like the key to life. And I kind of feel that we have outlived our biological envelope by living past maybe the age of 50 to 60. So if you look at animals in nature, they live long enough to grow up, reproduce, get their offspring old enough to be reproductive, and then they die off. Humans used to do that, but they don't anymore because of clean water, adequate food, Western medicine. So your hormones kind of start tapering off as early as 30, and in some cases even earlier than that. And then by the time you're in your 40s and 50s, the reproductive hormones are pretty much at a very low ebb. And for women, maybe sometimes non-existent at all. So
basically at like 50, 60, we just turn into like a useless sack of blood.
Yes.
That's what I'm hearing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So all right.
Your muscles start to atrophy. Your eyesight starts to change. Your bones start to become less dense. Your brain starts to decline in terms of how fast it can push ideas and actions through. And those are all related to hormones made by either the pituitary, the thyroid, or the hypothalamus, the adrenal glands, and then like all the reproductive organs. And that's...
So you would say when I'm like, say I'm like trying to watch a show... And I'm like, oh, I haven't seen this before. I'll check this out. And then I click on this movie and it says resume. And I'm like, uh-oh. Resume? I've already watched this fucking thing?
Yeah. Yeah,
it's a bad sign.
Yeah. And we used to say, your dad and I used to say, uh-oh, it's time to up the ginkgo when you have like moments like that where you feel like, God, I'm just not quite as sharp. So some of that is
Ginkgo biloba.
Yeah, ginkgo biloba had a moment because I remember everybody being like, we got to take ginkgo. And what was that? I was like in middle school. I just heard everyone had to talk about ginkgo biloba.
You're like, biloba? What is this fucking Lord of the Rings?
Yes. That's right. Yeah.
And it did because that was when there was a peak in research about it. But actually, if you go and look at the literature on it, it's still a very strong proponent of memory and cognitive issues, probably because it improves cerebral circulation, which your microcirculation starts to fail too. It's all hormonally based. So my interest was in both staving off the damage that having no hormones does to the human body. And also, you know, we're all looking towards, you know, the key to life, the way to live as you age, feeling robust and, you know, as healthy as you can be. And I think a lot of that has to do with hormone balance. So I, about 5 years ago, I decided to leave a very large healthcare organization that pretty much controls the world and go out in my own practice of doing bioidentical hormone replacement therapy, which is slightly different than just hormone replacement therapy because it invokes the use of compounding pharmacies. So there's kind of two schools of thought. There's Eastern medicine and Western medicine. I think combining those two to make more of a holistic approach. Certainly you want the big guns of Western medicine when you need them. But sometimes, especially in hormone replacement therapy, having set doses of hormones doesn't work for everybody. In fact, it works for very few people. So what happens is women get to menopause and they start having symptoms of losing their hormones, hot flashes, night sweats, poor sleep, weight gain, memory issues, balance issues, dry eyes, loss of libido, loss of muscle tone. And they go to their primary care physician and they are told, number one, oh, hormones aren't good. They're dangerous. They'll cause cancer. Or number two, yeah, we got something for you. One size fits all. Try this. Lady goes home. It's either too strong, not strong enough, doesn't work. They give up on it. And then they're faced with this long period of time where their hormones are waxing and waning and they feel horrible. They feel like shit. Yeah. So enter in compounding pharmacies, which are fabulous, and they are the bane of Big Pharma. Big Pharma wants to control everything. It's very lucrative, and they like it. Compounding pharmacies are able to mix up drugs to a recipe that the provider gives them. So, for example, if somebody needs, you know, an eighth of a milligram of estrogen, because too much makes them feel poorly and too little doesn't resolve their symptoms or protect them from osteoporosis, dementia, heart disease. They're kind of stuck. But when you call a compounding pharmacy, they'll make up any kind of little magic recipe that you want. So that's where my interest lay, because I was one of those women whose foray into big pharma for symptomatic relief of menopause symptoms was not effective. It made me either crazy, or it didn't help, or it made me sick to my stomach, like birth control pills, gave me a headache. So I think that's what sort of sparked my interest in it. And then I was able to establish a practice and provide care for women and men, because men's hormones also decline starting as early as age 20 or 30. And for some people, especially high stakes individual, you probably know people or may even be one, that everything in their life is high stakes. They're very type A. They burn through hormones faster than the average bear because they're spending all of their precursor hormones that would go to make testosterone and progesterone on making cortisol, because they need that cortisol to keep that adrenaline going. So the same.
So like a John J. Rambo.
Yes.
Is pretty, yeah.
Yeah.
Or he's living a high stakes life.
High stakes firefighters, police officers, combat soldiers, a lot of people who have emergency room people. And even many of our friends, I have friends that if they, you know, don't take a dress to the dry cleaners, it's an emergency. It's 911. And people who live like that are like going to have issues. Yeah, exactly.
I might even have a wife. Yes.
We all know and have somebody in our life who's like that. Also, people that have chronic illness. So folks that have autoimmune disease, diabetes, any of the arthritises, psoriasis, just something that is stressful physiologically.
A sickness for the thickness.
Exactly. Anything that's stressful physiologically.
Well, that's guys that are, or women that are into like folks that, you know, are carrying a little extra weight, some curves. Yes. They got a sickness for the thickness.
Okay.
They might need some compounding pharmacy to help them with that.
They might. And that's another thing, is that cortisol, which is produced by the adrenal glands as a response to stress, is the anathema of weight loss. So people who are like stressed all the time, and a lot of times it's kind of a negative feedback loop. They're stressed because they're overweight. They can't lose weight. It's because they're pumping out cortisol, which had an evolutionary advantage for the caveman. So in times of duress, either physical stress or scared, you know, you go outside the cave, you see the dinosaur, you run back in the cave. That's the way we were designed to react to stress. It was supposed to be an immediate response that lasted a half an hour and then it's all gone. Then you recover for a couple weeks. Now we live in this sort of situation where maybe it's not as physically dangerous as it used to be, but people have stressors that they just can't unload. I have so many women who are in their mid-30s, early 40s, and they have these horrible lives that, I mean, they're great lives, but they're so full and their plate is so full. And they come to me and they're so tired and they're overweight. They don't have any joy. And it's because they're trying to be the perfect employee, the perfect mom, the perfect wife. And you can't do all that. So that all you're shunting all your precursor hormones to making cortisol to deal with all the stress, and you don't have any leftover for testosterone or progesterone. So they get estrogen dominant, overweight, tired, no libido, and no joy in life. And that's what hormone does.
And you mentioned, you know, humans and dinosaurs. You believe in the Genesis timeline, right?
Actually, I think it's more the Mormon one where dinosaurs and men walk the earth at the same time.
Yeah. That's
I do.
Just to be clear. Yes. So
I'm not an evolutionist at all.
Yeah. No way.
Six days and then a rest, you guys. Yes. Yeah. 6 days.
Yes.
See, yeah, who cares about carbon dating? 64, you know.
Yeah. What's a day? You know, what's a day? What's a day?
I think that's it's so important because, you know, this goes beyond. So we became obsessed with creating a longer lifespan, mm-hmm. you know, but the shift now, and certainly I think hormones are a big part of this, is how can we improve the health span?
Yeah.
So you want to live longer, but you also want to be, you mentioned it, robust and healthy. And so, you know, who cares if you're getting to 100, if you feel like shit or you don't want to have sex and you don't want to dunk, you can't dunk a basketball. You know, as an 88-year-old, you want to be able to dunk a basketball.
At least try, you know, at least get up.
Yeah, so it goes beyond just, you know, keeping you alive or treating symptoms. It's like, well, how can we make you as healthy as possible? And so, you know, mixing up a lot of different hormones is not sexy to, you know, big pharma or somebody that's trying to make, you know, a one pill does it all type thing, because one pill can't do it all. It's like you need to be doing labs, you need to be seeing where people are at, and then, you know, and then giving them, you know, multiple ways and, you know, combining multiple things to do that. And that's what you can do with these compounding pharmacies.
People are so much smarter now about nutrition. You know, I mean, people are starting to get on board that we don't have the food triangle anymore, and you don't want to make grains your biggest, you know, amount of food that you're eating a day. And people are pretty good about taking supplements. You know, they read, they understand what the value is, but absent the hormones, those things are not going to get you, I don't feel, in my opinion, to where you optimally want to be.
Go ahead, Aaron.
No, I was going to say, so like, what if you're hearing this episode and you're driving and you look in the rearview mirror and you're like, am I joyless and overweight and I don't remember where I'm driving? Let's say, for example, these are all the things you said are like ding ding ding. What would you tell that person to do next? Okay,
where would you start?
So it of course, a lot of it depends on age. You know, so most of my clientele would be 40s, 50s, 60s, but then I was starting to get a lot of much younger patients who had been referred to me by somebody else that I was treating. So I would want to look at, when I deal with patients, I want to look at everything, kind of like you do when you talk to people. You know, what was your childhood like? Because people that had a stressful childhood, for example, a parent was maybe an alcoholic or verbally abusive or even physically abusive.
Or if you were like John J. Rambo's kid.
Yes.
Just to pull him back into this.
Okay. Yeah. Those kids.
Brian Denny, he's running them out of town. You know, there's Troutman's poking in, you know.
It's bad. For Rambo. And probably his child would have a hard time because they'd always be on the run, you know, and always looking for first blood. So I think that when kids grow up like that, they tend to be more type A because they've always had this protective need. You know, their head is always on a swivel. They can never relax. Mm. So people like that, I want to talk about doing things that are self-efficacy type of actions. So, and there's also people that like to count, people that don't like to count, you know, and you're in the gym. I go to the gym with my youngest daughter and I'm counting reps. She goes, don't count. I'm like, okay. I won't count. You figure out how many you've done. I don't care how many you've done. And some people don't like to count calories. They don't like to count grams of protein. They don't like to. So I think you have to figure out what kind of patient you're dealing with. And do they come from a secure environment? Do they come from a stressful one? Because the ones that came from stressful ones are always going to have issues with stress management, because that was what kept them safe growing up. So they're going to have issues with their adrenal glands, which are the glands that produce the stress hormones. And when you're treating hormone replacement therapy, there's an order of operations like there is with math. You do the stuff in the parentheses first. So in the parentheses is the adrenal glands. If somebody's in adrenal fatigue, you can give them all the hormones in the world. You're not going to fix how they feel, because you have to fix what's going on with their adrenal glands. So I would start by taking a history, you know, what are you eating? What are you doing? What's your lifestyle like? What do you do for fun? You know, what do you do for work? And then based on that and their age, get some labs. Like Ryan said, oftentimes people are very low on vitamin D. They're low on vitamin B12. They're low on ferritin, which can affect everything, mood, how your skin looks, how your hair looks. So I would correct all the micronutrients. And then I would look at thyroid. Thyroid is a gland that is a metabolic gland. So it revs your metabolism or can slow it down. So is your thyroid well-tuned? Do we need to do something about that? And then I would look at hormone levels. For women, you want to get hormone levels. You can do it multiple ways: saliva, finger stick, blood draw, dried urine, and kind of check levels. Oftentimes, younger women today have very low hormone levels. And again, I think it's because of the stressful environment in which we find ourselves or their stressful lifestyles. And then correct the hormones and then check back in about a month or so, because hormones act very rapidly. You feel the difference probably within a week to 3 weeks max of hormones. Micronutrients, as you both know, a lot longer. You know, you have to treat vitamin D for probably 90 days before you're going to see marked improvement in somebody's D level. B12 comes up a lot more rapidly. And then how are people taking things? Are they taking it under their tongue where it goes into their capillary system and goes in very rapidly? Are you swallowing it? Then it goes through the first pass through the liver, slower onset, longer life in the body. And then food, people's relationship with food is very unusual. Nobody eats like they're an athlete, unless they're an athlete. And that's what we all need to do. I mean, we all need to be thinking about what we're doing as physical level and then feeding our bodies to sustain that physical level and trying not to use food and alcohol as a crutch to get through our crazy lifestyles. So it's a lot.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's important to note that, you know, you working as a medical professional are being systematic in this approach, and then also, you know, running the lab. So it's not just like this kind of blanket, like, well, let's just, you know, give you this supplement and do this and do this and do this and goodbye. It's like, hey, we got to see where you're starting at, test the levels, find out where there's deficiencies, and then use some kind of high quality supplement for the micronutrients that's third party tested, so that you make sure that you're getting something that actually, you know, has what it promises to have in it, because there's a lot of bullshit in the supplement world.
Horrible.
And then you're consistently checking in with that to make sure that there's showing improvement and that the levels are changing, so that you can get it, you know, you can get it specifically in the right area that it needs to be and titrate as necessary. So I just feel like the people will like look at Instagram and there's a lot of like, you know, these studies are very exciting and interesting, and there's a lot of quote unquote longevity experts that will say, you know, oh, just, you know, take vitamin D because vitamin D is good for you, and take this because it's good for you. And I think that there's some level where people could get on that stuff and take it prophylactically. But if you are experiencing, you know, a lot of these symptoms that, you know, hormone deficiency that could be caused by a hormone deficiency, it's important to go at it from a, you know, a systematic, tried and true approach. And there's a lot of like, I know you've mentioned there's a lot of like good, ways that people can get their labs without even having to see their primary care doctor. They can at least like, you know, use some company that's, that will do a blood draw, and then, you know, they can look at their, all their levels.
There's a great one that I like. It's called ultalab.com. And that is for venipuncture, which means they draw your blood out of your blood vessel. You go on there, you look at what they have, they're discounted, you order your own labs, and then they send the values to you. But what's good about them is they're not fly by night. They direct you to either LabQuest or Core. There's all these different labs that are out in the community, and they direct you to one of their drawing stations. So it's run by a legitimate lab. There's also ways to check your hormones through saliva or urine, dried urine, which is also very valuable. And those you can find multiple places. I use ZRT, but there's multiple ones of those, which are good. And I think that it's important when you're feeling like you may have some deficiencies that you do look at everything, because micronutrients are super valuable. But if somebody's D is robust and you're thinking, well, I'm going to give them D because their mood is off, and I know that D treats mood, then all the D in the world is not going to change that mood. You know, you've already got them at a robust level. So then you have to start looking at other reasons for mood or for overweight or for low energy that is not related to sometimes micronutrients. And I think that's where it's important to evaluate thyroid function, adrenal function, and hormone levels.
Man.
And so we've had questions about TRT specifically, testosterone replacement therapy. And so there's a lot of schools of thought on that. And this is where you get into a lot of gym bros and, you know, guys that want to jack it way up. And then there's also, you know, criticism as on it as far as like, oh, if you start this therapy, then your body shuts down on its natural, you know, production of it. And then there's like injection versus the creams and, you know, and all that.
And girls are taking it now to lose weight, or like, or adding it in as a way to lose weight is what I've seen online as well.
So testosterone replacement is equally as important for women as it is for men. Women make testosterone at the rate of about 1 to 8 milligrams a day, much lower than the rate that men make testosterone. But testosterone is very important for conception, for balance, for dry eye, for muscle development, and for libido. Probably the main reason why I would prescribe it for women would be for libido, but it hits all those other things as well. And very important for men as well, because low testosterone in men can have a huge impact on mood, muscle atrophy, cardiac health. You have more testosterone receptors in your heart than you have anywhere else in your body, which I find very interesting.
You'd think like your balls.
Yes, and your genitalia would be where it should be, but it's in your heart.
Your dick and balls.
But it's your heart, Stanger. It's your heart. Okay.
When they have,
well, I mean, you know, I think of my genitalia as my heart.
Yes, when they have done testosterone levels, every once in a while you'll hear about a tragic death of a young man, you know, a 17-year-old playing basketball and has sudden cardiac death. Mm-hmm. And it's not that common, but you hear about it, and it's always shocking. They'll do toxicology levels, like, nope, they're not on any drugs. They do cardiac studies. Nope, he didn't have anything wrong with his heart. on every single one of those that they've actually done a testosterone level, and it's not a lot because why would they draw a testosterone postmortem on somebody that had sudden cardiac death? Their testosterone has always been way subnormal. Way subnormal, which leads you to believe that this is a really important hormone for heart health, and women have as many heart issues. They're not as well documented, but they have as many as men do as they get into their 50s and 60s. And it's, I feel a lot of it is because they've lost the natural protection of testosterone. So TRT replacement, I think, is critical for both sexes. I think that, in my opinion, injections are not the way to go, because what happens when you inject something is you get this huge spike of testosterone, which then falls off to almost nothing by the end of the month. And then you get another huge spike and it falls off to nothing. When you use a cream, then you get somebody to a therapeutic level and you apply the cream daily, you keep them there. So now you've got this nice steady state of testosterone. Same thing with other hormones, better to use a small daily dose, either oral or sublingual under your tongue or a cream, and keep a steady state as opposed to having big peaks and valleys. It's like pain management. You don't wait for somebody to have horrible pain, give them a pain pill, then they got good relief, then they fall down. You just want to get them up to a comfortable level and keep them there.
And that's, you know, that may be less sexy to people that are trying to do it for
sexy reasons,
to really juice.
Oh yes.
To juice it up. Yeah. It's like, oh, I don't want to, you know, hear about this, like just getting to a therapeutic level. Like I want like I want to be on stage or some crazy weird, you know, benefits, but then that's where that's where your health is starting to be jeopardized, and that's where it can be abused. So, you know, in the realm of trying to do it, you know, to improve quality of life and, you know, make sure that you're healthy the longest, it's like, you know, being very systematic about it, testing it regularly to make sure that you're not going over or falling under, and then keeping it at that level for as long as you can.
Yeah, the second part of that is that you don't have the negative ramifications of losing your own testosterone production. Uh-huh. So, like, when you put people on TRT, they're still making testosterone. They just weren't making enough before. They're still not making enough, so you're just putting them up to a therapeutic level. I have one client who he does inject testosterone. He injects enormous amounts of it, and he also does the whole stack. He stacks and he goes on for 3 months and then off for a month and then on for 3 months. His labs are horrible. His cholesterol super high, even on a statin. He has hypertension. He's polycythemic, which means he makes way too many red blood cells, because that's what testosterone does when you use it. So he's at risk for stroke or clot of some kind. And he will not listen to reason. I will not prescribe that for him. I prescribe other things for him, some human growth hormone and some other things, but not the testosterone, because he's doing, like, he's injecting 160 milligrams weekly, which is
what's normal.
Well, I would say that most of my male patients are on anywhere between maybe 8 milligrams a day and maybe 50 milligrams a day.
Wow. Okay.
But that's dermally absorbed, so it's slowly. And way more of them are closer to the lower end of the scale. I have one young patient who had fairly significant cancer and has recovered from it. But because he was under this huge physiological stress for like 10 years, his testosterone levels got really depleted. And so now we're slowly bringing them back up to normal.
Yeah.
But yeah, this guy is, wow. I mean, and he's huge.
Yeah.
I mean, he's absolutely huge. He's scary huge, but the damage I feel that he's doing to his body by maintaining this high level is, and you know, all the other growth hormone steroids that he's on, I mean, Dynabol and all this.
Wow. Are you talking about stuff. Ryan?
No,
yes.
I mean.
He's scary big. He's scary big.
Yeah. Scary
what,
big.
What kind of, do you think The Rock is on gear? He's on gear for
oh,
sure.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You can't what get you that much on COD. Trust me.
Yeah. It's not just fish and no. Isopure protein powder.
Yeah, no, no.
That's yeah. too bad. What's up, everybody? I want to refute what Janet Stanger NP was saying about me on the Dumbbells podcast. It's all drink Terramana tequila and just know that The Rock smells. Yeah. Well, that's yeah, man. That's so interesting. Like all these, you know, it's the I guess the chance for abuse, you know, or the desire to abuse it can be enticing for some people, especially younger people.
Potentially. You know, yeah. I think, the problem also with the testosterone that I prescribe is it's a Schedule 3 drug, which means that you have to have a DEA, a drug enforcement license to do it. And it's the prescriptions is only good for 6 months. And that's a result of people abusing it.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so here you have this thing that could be, you know, life changing for some people, but then there's jerks out there. And, you know, it's also, it, you know, is there some Western medicine in there that's maybe trying to, you know, make it a little bit more challenging to have access and use this stuff?
Yes.
I mean, I'm not saying doctors, you know, individual doctors, but like the, you know, kind of, the bigger, you know, hospitals and medicine and
healthcare.
They
don't
healthcare,
want to do it. Yeah.
They don't want to do it.
They don't yeah. want to do it. I don't think they want to prescribe any hormones. And that's kind of based on the Women's Health Initiative that came out in 2004 that said women who took postmenopausal estrogen were more likely to develop breast cancer, that took progesterone were more likely to develop blood clots, and they didn't even test testosterone for because testosterone is not an appropriate hormone for women, even though women make it. Huh. So huh. that was
thanks a lot, patriarchy.
Yeah. Yeah,
that,
one more.
That was all, yeah, that was all refuted because they did not use bioidentical hormones in the Women's Health Initiative, and the women that were recruited into the study were not screened for comorbidities. So they were hypertensive, they were smokers, they already had breast cancer, and they were older. So they're saying they didn't even get relief of their menopause symptoms. The women that they recruited were postmenopausal, so they weren't even having menopause symptoms. So that's when we took everybody off hormones.
So, wow. And that's a real shitty study.
It is. It's a horrible study.
And to explain that to people, that means that like to have a study that really makes sense and proves something, they have to use like a population of people that are as close to the same as they can find. So close to the same age, they all have to be treated the exact same way. And so, and then also you mentioned comorbidities. So it's just making sure that all these women, you know, aren't dealing with diabetes or, you know, obesity or all this other stuff that could be, you know, that could taint the study because it's like, well, yeah. It doesn't help us, you know, because we, you know, they're not, you know, they're not the same and ideally treated with the, you know, by the same people with the exact same drugs. Yeah. And so, you know, a lot of these studies still, even though people are getting hip to this stuff, a lot of it will happen too. You know, if it's not, especially if it's not by some, you know, drug company that's trying to prove a point or.
Yeah. You have to be very leery of a study that's funded by Novo Nordisk or Eli Lilly, because obviously they want the outcome to favor whatever drug they're using. So I try and look at like meta-analysis. When I look at it with multiple studies, I always look to see how large was the population group, how good were their controls, how many variables were they testing? Because if you're testing five variables, how do you know about that? You know, so, but I think compounding pharmacies are under the gun all the time by Big Pharma. They would like to see them all shut down, which would be tragic for a lot of reasons, because they don't just compound hormones. They compound thyroid. they can compound blood pressure medicines that are not filled with fillers and dyes, because sometimes people can take something, but they can't tolerate the filler or the dye. And that's what makes it impossible to treat them. So you can get pure things. And like when I have them compound my hormones, I have them put them in organic olive oil or organic jojoba oil so that I know that they're not going to be subject to other toxins that Big Pharma doesn't mind using, because it offers stability of the, you know, makes the pill good for a year. They think that if your pill is blue, you're more likely to take it than if it's white. I'm not so sure about that. I don't think I need the methylphthalein blue to encourage me to take a pill, but that's the thought.
Unless you're like blue in the Crips. I love blue.
Yeah. We could add some blue, but we could make it like calm you from natural lavender or something like that.
Oh, that sounds nice.
Yeah, because you don't want to lose all the Smurfs.
Yeah.
Smurfs ain't going to take it unless it's blue.
Yeah. They're a huge, huge proponent. Aaron.
Yeah.
I think Smurfette's going to get on, you know, the estrogen unless it's blue. Smurfette needs a little testosterone.
She does.
How old is Smurfette now?
I mean, she started at like 3,000 years old, didn't she?
Smurfette?
Yeah.
Are the Smurfs
old? I think they're
old,
yeah. I think they're as old as time.
I didn't know that. I mean, I think, I mean, Gargamel's got to be long dead.
No, they don't die. They just...
No, Gargamel was the
Gargamel, I think, did pass. But Smurfs are fine. They're kicking it. They probably got a new bad guy there after. Or just after them.
Hopefully they all survived Azrael. That's Gargamel's cat. I know you're fascinated by all this, Mom. My mom was more of a Snorks person. That was the underwater knockoff of the Smurfs.
The Snorks?
The Snorks.
Ooh, I should look into that.
Yeah, there was something else I wanted to ask you, Mom, but I can't think of it now.
Was it about like Semarillin or some of the new... weight loss drugs? Those are the big darlings now.
The semaglutides. Where do you stand on that? Monjaro
is like tirzepatide. So they were originally designed as type 2 diabetes drugs. So what they do is semaglutide is Ozempic and Wegovy.
Yeah,
and then the Monjaro is the tirzepatide.
These names are just fun, you know?
I know.
The marketing for that team has killed it.
It's like Monjaro. It's like, am I climbing Mount Kilimanjaro?
I know, that's what it does sound like.
Or it also feels like a California gaming casino.
Ozempic is like, am I an Olympic athlete?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. So anyway... Both of those work. One's a GLP-1. The other one is a GLP-1, GLP-2. So they both work to increase insulin production and decrease insulin resistance. And that's why they work as type 2 diabetes drugs. When they were being tested, they found that they had the benefit of also causing weight loss. So... that's where their Monjaro is not FDA approved for weight loss yet, but everybody's using it off label. I mean, you can't even get your hands on it for the most part.
Well, Monjaro is, right? But it's Ozempic that's not, right?
No, Ozempic has Wegovy. Ozempic and Wegovy are both semaglutide. And Wegovy is the weight loss drug that is Ozempic. But they're the exact same drug made by the exact same company. Monjaro is still fighting to get approval to be a weight loss drug.
Okay.
So if you're type 2 diabetic and overweight, you can get Monjaro and your insurance will pay for it. If you're only using it for weight loss, insurance won't pay for it because it's off label.
And because it's not generic yet, it's super expensive.
Oh, God. They won't be generic. They get the patents for 20 years. It will not be generic for 20 years.
Wow.
They say they need that to to make back their R&D money, but it's just, and then what they'll do is at 19 and a half years, they'll change one molecule in the formula so that then they can get the patent extended for another 20 years.
Damn.
So yeah, it's probably, I don't know, maybe $1,600 a month or something for Mounjaro.
Wow.
And it's it's a weekly injection. They both are injections.
Wow. You could get an Audi for that.
Range Rover.
I thought you meant for a second an Audi belly button. So that tells you where I'm at in my brain right now. Yeah. Yes. An Audi. Cool. Yeah.
So where do you stand on? So what Aaron and I have kind of come to understand is that, you know, with these, it's a very personal decision to go on these drugs, but there is incredible amount of damage that you can do to your body if you are if you have high blood pressure, if you're dealing with some obesity issues that you can't seem to get under control, and it's like this kind of risk benefit thing where there may be some risks in taking these drugs, but if you're redlining it as far as high blood pressure, then it may make sense to kind of look into something like this if nothing else has worked. And we've talked about it on the show is like, the issue is like, are you going to stay on this drug forever? And are you getting the tools, you know, if you have to go off of it to, you know, maintain the weight loss that you experienced while on the drug? And then there's also people that, you know, are like a real housewife of Salt Lake City that just want to look good for vacation. Yeah. And they're kind of taking this stuff. And it's like, okay, if you're not, you know, if you're not dealing with the health consequences of being obese, you know, is it worth taking the risk and doing this drug?
So the risks for both of them are similar. Not side effect, nausea, number one side effect, and you can treat that with Zofran or something else. If you are already a diabetic and you're taking another type 2 diabetes medicine, you can certainly tank your blood sugar way down, which is seriously dangerous. I mean, that's life-threatening to get your blood sugar too low. There's always a could be allergic to its side effect. Other than that, they seem to be fairly safe. Now, that there's a caveat there because these drugs are new and sometimes you don't see serious side effects, downstream side effects for 20 years, you know, so you always have to be cautious when you're, you know, the Indian, because you might take the arrow or the pioneer, whatever that saying is, you know, the people that are out there first could have bad side effects. But what I have been told, I have not tried either one of them, but what I have been told by several of my patients who have tried them is that they had a really bad relationship with food that went back decades, you know, long, long time, eating for the wrong reasons. And it actually took their interest in food away. So this one lady said that she, wherever she went in her life, she was always thinking, what can I eat when I go there? If we go out to dinner, can I just get a salad? Will everybody think it's weird? If we go to the party, can I not eat or not have a cocktail? And food prepping and always worried about how she was going to eat. And then she got over that with it. So that was one benefit that I had not heard the drug companies say, that it got people over their concern about food. The treatment plan for most people that take it is to get down to their target weight, and that could take, you know, a year, it could take 6 months, sort of depends on average weight loss with most of those drugs. It's between 4 and 8 pounds a month, and it can be higher end if you have a lot more to lose, lower end if you don't have much to lose. But then you stay on a maintenance dose for a year after you hit your target weight. Because we all know that with weight loss, it's really important for the body to adapt a new set point. People that don't allow that to happen are much more likely to go back up in their weight gain. So it takes
your body just like, hey, let's get you back up
there, dude. Absolutely. Yeah. It's always looking for homeostasis. Yeah. So it's You can drink all the alkaline water you want in the world. You're still going to get back to 7.0 pH because your body's always trying to look for homeostasis. So if it's used to 150 pounds, we love 150 pounds, and you drop it down to 120, you have to keep it there for a year before your body says, okay, 120 is now our good weight. We're happy there.
So, thanks for using the alkaline pH allegory. I think. A little too smart. Oh, thanks. Now I understand.
It's everything. Everything is always trying to get back to steady state.
Yes.
Yes.
That makes sense.
So, and that's true with pH too. Very true with pH. So,
wait. All the science nerds out there are like, oh, thank you. Yeah. Now I understand.
Now I understand. So with the Mounjaro or the Ozempic, once you get to your goal weight, then instead of doing a weekly injection, I have people try, we'll try doing it every other week and see if you can maintain that. And then try going down to once a month and see if you can maintain that. And if you can't, then go back up. But we usually reduce the dose down because it's, you step the dose up to get people to a therapeutic level. And then when they're at their optimal thing, then you step the dose down. And that's more based on cost than any physiological danger. Because they're crazy expensive, you know, so.
Yeah, and that makes sense, you know, the tapering. So you get yourself used to it and like, okay, this is the new set point.
Yeah, and nothing works unless it is also a part of a healthy, you know, eating plan and a healthy activity plan, you know, so.
So there's some education that should be a part of it.
Should be a part of it. Yeah. You know, you want to, for women, I like them to be getting between 90 and 120 grams of protein a day, kind of depending on what their activity and their
age.
Yeah. And their goal is 65 grams of fat, you know, at least 25 grams of fiber, and then make the balance up in, you know, complex carbs.
For understanding like, you know, your macros and like nutrients, it's like you're taking the protein for your resistance training and to build and recover and maintain.
Yes.
You're taking the carbohydrates to fuel your workouts, and then you're taking the fats for your to maintain healthy hormones.
Hormones and brain, yeah, definitely. And brain, yeah. So yeah. I think if you are taking this kind of weight loss deal over time, you can then adapt your eating plan so that this makes sense. You know, you don't feel deprived anymore. You don't feel like you.
Yeah, your body's not fighting to maintain this unhealthy weight anymore.
Yeah.
So that would help your interest level in foods. I know it slows your gut transit time.
It does.
It makes you feel full longer. So it's a good way to reset your apostat.
Yes.
Which is a combination of thermostat and appetite.
Yeah.
You know. Kind of interesting. Hey, listen, I'm not the NP. I mean, clearly I feel dumb whenever I try to like chime in because I'm like, so like your body like likes food. You mentioned caveman. I definitely feel in the caveman realm.
No, and the other caveat with those is anybody that's ever had a small bowel obstruction or has gut pain, I mean, it can cause gastroparesis, which is actual shutdown of the gut. Very rare side effect, but very dangerous if you have it. So, and, you know, also it's just, I would like to say that everybody should just do it with, you know, fortitude and diet and exercise, but sometimes that's just not realistic. And sometimes you have to render onto Caesar's what Caesar's, you know, and pay homage to Big Pharma and say, okay, I'm going to use this, but I'm going to use it as a tool that's going to help me maintain or get on top of my healthy lifestyle.
I think so, because it's like, you know, some people, you know, have it stacked against them to where there's something going on genetically from, you know, like how their biology is. And then there's people that have experienced some kind of trauma that's now manifesting itself in, you know, food and activity that they don't even really maybe know or understand, and nobody could figure out.
Yeah.
So if you you can take advantage of something like this and it's available to you, by all means. You know, you mentioned like the interest in food. That's fascinating, because like I'll watch a movie and I'll see somebody's office desk and there's a big bowl of M&Ms on the desk, and I'm just like, wow,
how could you ever work?
What is that there? And there's yeah.
Why how can they focus there?
On? Yeah. What's going on with this, and who's eating the M&Ms, and can we get to the bottom of that? And let's figure these out. Somebody just takes a handful and shakes them around a little bit like they're dice and then eats them, and that's the end of it.
Yeah.
Cause I'd be, you know,
I'm
dumping that thing in my mouth. Like it's
that bowl, you know, would be
drinking
empty
from the grail.
Oh, yeah. I know. It's, yeah. Well, I found that relationship with food awesome.
I just think that would be, I'm just curious about like a person like that, that like lost interest on the drug when they tapered off, if it came back. That's, I'm like, I don't know. I mean, that's what I'm
that
curious
sounds
about.
Like it's reasonable, but hopefully, I guess because of the long journey that she has in front of her, maybe her relationship with food will get a little bit healthier along the way. But you're right. I mean, who's to say that that's going to linger once the drug is withdrawn?
Yeah. I don't know. Because I think that part is really interesting to me. I think that's the most interesting part, is the people that say like, I stopped caring about food because I love food. I care about it so much. And I'm like, what would you like?
And Aaron, it cares about you.
Thank you. Because I keep emailing, calling, nothing. No, but I think that.
Hey, food, it's Aaron. Just checking in. I don't know. Maybe it's dumb if we hang out, but I was thinking about it. Anyway, I thought I saw you. Bye.
If I go to a new city, I want to try the food that's like, what's up here, you know? And, that piece of that puzzle is like, what would it be like to just live in a world where it's like, what do you don't care what's for dinner? You like, you don't care. Like you actually don't care. Like you really don't care. And I'm like,
it's like getting castrated or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, wow, now I don't have to worry about that anymore. Well, I think, you know, it's like, hopefully it stamps out the fire. You know, if you have this fire that's burning for food, that's unnatural, and then you get a break from it for, you know, 2+ years, then, you know, hopefully it just completely resets all that.
Yeah.
You know, or at least, you know, quiets it a lot. That stays down. I guess that's going to be interesting to see, you know,
yes,
for these people.
Yeah, time will tell. But yeah, it is. And it's not a magic bullet. People can overcome it just like they can overcome gastric bypass.
Yeah.
It's just another tool in the armamentarium for people that, you know, have tried and not succeeded with, you know, the typical, just, you know, reduce your calories by 200 over your activity level. And I think what's great about being a kind of concierge medicine and using compounded pharmacies and having a holistic approach is you can actually help people that have not been able to been helped for 50 years.
Yeah.
And that's really a nice benefit of leaving a big HMO to work in a private practice, is that people feel actually listened to. And I think that helps with their success and whatever they're trying to achieve too, is that finally somebody's listening to them and checking micronutrients. You know, you go where I worked before, when I would run blood levels on micronutrients, I would get a little hate email from my chief saying, why are you doing this? Just tell them to take them. And I'm like, why would I tell somebody to take a fat soluble vitamin if I didn't bother to check a level first? It's like, what if they don't need it? What if it doesn't help? What if it's going to make matters worse? But that's, I think, the way most medicine is going, is just, we got 10 minutes. Let's get it done. Let's treat the symptoms. Don't worry about the root cause. Get them out the door.
Yeah.
Oh, it's brutal. I have a friend that's got some, he knows he's overnourished, with food and knows he needs to work on it and has been through it with multiple doctors. And so he was going in for a checkup and he had to see somebody that wasn't his doctor first. And then that person gave him the whole spiel on losing weight and looking into that and what are you doing for activity, and it really fucking pissed him off. He's like, I'm smart, I understand that you're not my doctor, like why do I need to, you know, I need to lose weight from you, you know.
Yeah,
it was just like, it's tough. So if you have somebody that's like really listening to you and checking in and then kind of knows like, oh, I know this person intellectually understands what they need to do to, you know, in addition to blood pressure medication to get that under control, you know, he shouldn't have to experience it from, you know, the person that's checking him in at the door, the person that comes in to do his vitals, you know, a dog that's waiting outside the hospital, you know, it's just like,
and they don't ever have the time, in my opinion, to see, okay, I understand that you've worked really hard at this, that you work out hard and you've tried really hard. Yeah. You know, we don't need to revisit all of that. You've already done that. What's next? It's like psychology, behavioral medicine. Maybe we don't need to know that back 18 years ago something happened that makes you anxious. Maybe we just need to give you help to treat your anxiety right now, you know?
Yeah.
So both have value, but... and even talking to my colleagues where I used to work about stuff is they're just like, why do you care? It's like,
yeah,
because that's why I got into this is because I do care, you know, and it's like, well, you just need to get them out the door. And I'm like, I don't think you do.
So I think, you know, because as opposed to just lamenting about, you know, the state of things in Western medicine, there's, like you mentioned, Ma, there's a lot of great stuff.
Yes.
There's tools out there. And I think that, you know, if you don't have access to the best doctors or the concierge medicine that we're talking about, there's stuff that you can do that you have control of. So it's, you know, getting your own labs, you know, using one of those places that you talked about, you're not affiliated with, but just in your experience, they've been, you know, effective, so that you can come in and see whoever your primary doctor is with some information and just be your own advocate and say like, look, this is what I've discovered about myself and this is what I need.
Yes.
So.
And treating your own micronutrient deficiencies is very available with doing labs like that. The other thing is that if you're limited to Big Pharma, there are bioidentical hormones available through Big Pharma that can be very effective if it's the right dose for you, magic bullet. So you don't necessarily have to go through compounding. There are ways to do workarounds in big medicine. There's oral progesterone, there's estrogen patches, estrogen pills, and sometimes they're super effective, and that could be very valuable.
And for everything else, there's Tijuana.
Yes.
There it is.
And there's actually a pharmacy called Can America, CanAmerica, where a lot of things are available to people if they're interested. So,
hot.
I don't recommend people going off lone wolf for a lot of hormone replacement and or weight management drugs, just because they can have some dangerous and very bad side effects. The dose is in the poison, or the poison is in the dose. So you want to be mindful of finding somebody who will listen, and also shop. You know, if your primary care doctor is not listening to you, find somebody else in the practice that might be more amenable. Yeah, definitely.
Oh, well, so this was so helpful, Mom. We've taken up too much of your time, but I know people are going to enjoy all of this and maybe have some more questions. And so it just so happens that I have a good relationship with our guest today. And so I could probably get sort of.
Yeah. Sometimes you're my favorite kid, sometimes you're not. So.
As it should be. Yeah. Yep.
There was an instance where I got this, had a paper out, and I got like these leaflets that I was supposed to roll into all the, you know, the papers that I was delivering, and then also to the houses that weren't on the route to see if I could entice them into getting the Press Tribune. And I may have like dumped them in a vacant lot by another house. The person may have seen me and told my parents and my mom, and I told my parents it was just a couple of them. And then my mom investigated and found out that it was, you know, pretty significant dump. Then I had to go take my little wagon with my mom and pick up all of them and prickly bushes and stuff. And it was maybe a huge amount. That might have happened. Oh, and the relationship might not have been as strong then. But it's pretty strong now. That's so awesome. I could probably get her to come back on and answer some more questions. She's also toying with the idea of her own podcast.
Okay.
I don't know. It's been thrown out there. So if that happens, we'll of course have her back on for her big launch if that happens. But at the very least, you guys can write in questions for her at askthedumbbells@gmail.com. And, you know, truly anything that comes up or that you're thinking about or maybe that you're even feeling. And again, you know, it's not meant to diagnose or treat, but, you know, she could throw out some information that might be helpful for you. And then you could do your own research on that too.
Yeah.
I don't know. Mom, is there anything else you want to promote or plug?
Yeah, there are some great books about hormones if people are interested. And one of them is by a doctor named Uzi Reiss, R-E-I-S, and he is actually an OBGYN who practices in Beverly Hills, and he's sort of the leader of the bioidentical hormone. His book is called Natural Superwoman. If anybody wants to sort of take a read of that, super interesting. And there's also one called The Estrogen Imperative, that all these kind of counteract the study, the Women's Health Initiative study, so people can take a look at both of those. Other than that, no, I'm just making my own organic sourdough and organic granola and living up with the hippies of 1969 here in Nevada City.
Yeah, she's got a whole like compound there and like does it like organic gardening and made her own starters for the sourdough and does like the legit sourdough where it's got like the air pockets in it.
Oh,
you know?
Oh yeah. Yummy. Oh, and we also distill our own hydrosols and essential oils. So I'm a big practitioner of essential oil. Ryan's been unfortunately one of my test cases for many of the essential oils.
I love it.
Hey, listen, they smell good and I smell bad. So,
yeah.
Thank you.
It kind of balances out.
It does.
So,
yeah. It does. Yes. You're welcome. Yeah. Good.
This is amazing to have you on. And you're an endless spring of information.
For real. I see where you get it from.
Thank you. Yeah. He does.
So please send in those questions, askthedumbbells@gmail.com. Erin's got her socials. What are the socials?
The Dumbbells across all social media platforms, except TikTok, and that is @thedumbbells.pod.
@thedumbbells.pod for the TikTok. Mom, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. You're welcome. Thank you. Bye.
Yep. So on behalf of myself and Erin McGowan Sines and our amazing guest today, Janet Stanger, NP, we would like to remind all our listeners out there to train dirty,
eat clean,
and live in between.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.